Chapter 23. I am the face you would not own, though you carve your place hidden in the crowd. Mine are the features you never saw as you stack your thin days in the tick of tonight's straw. My legion is the unexpected, a forest turned to masts, grass blades to swords. And this is the face you would not own, a brother with bad news, hiding in the crowd. Harbinger, Fisher. She'd had an uncle, a prince high on the rungs, but, alas, the wrong ladder. He had attempted a coup, only to find that all his agents were someone else's agents. Was it this conceit that had led to his death? Which choice made it all inevitable? Queen Abrastel had thought many times on the man's fate. The curious thing was, he'd actually made his escape out from the city, all the way to the eastern border, in fact. But on the morning of his last ride, a farmer had woken with crippling rheumatism in his legs. This man was 57 years old, and for 30-odd years, each month through the summers and autumns, he had taken the harvest of his own family's plot up to the village a league and a half away. And he had done this by pulling a two-wheeled cart. He must have awoken that morning in the turgid miasma of his own mortality, wearing down, wearing out, and studying the mists wreathing the low hills and glades edging the fields. He must have held a silence in his hands and in his heart. We pass on. All that was effortless becomes an ordeal, yet the mind remains lucid, trapped inside a failing body. Though the morning promised a fine day, night's cold darkness remained lodged within him. He had three sons, but all were in the levee and off fighting somewhere. Rumors of some uprising. The old man knew little about it and cared even less, except for the fact that his sons were not with him. In motion stiff with pain, he had hitched up the mule to a rickety flatbed wagon. He could as easily have chosen the cart, but the one mule he owned that wasn't too old or lame was a strangely long-bodied specimen, too long for the cart's yoke and spar. The efforts of preparation, concluding with loading the flatbed, had taken most of the morning, even with his half-blind wife's help. And when he set out on the road, quirting the beast along, the mists had burned off and the sun was high and strong. The stony track leading to the section road was more suited to a cart than a wagon, and so the going was slow, and upon reaching the section track and drawing close to the high road, he had the sun in his eyes. On this day, in a heap of stones in the corner of a field just next to the high road, a civil war was erupting in a wild beehive, and only a few moments before the farmer arrived, the hive swarmed. The old man, half dozing, had been listening to the rapid approach of a rider, but there was room on the road. It had been built for moving armies to and from the border, after all, and so he was not particularly concerned as those drumming hoofs drew ever closer. Yes, the rider was coming fast, likely some garrison messenger carrying bad news, and all such news was bad, as far as the farmer was concerned. He'd had a moment of worry over his sons, and then the swarm lifted from the side of the road and spun in a frenzied cloud to engulf his mule. The creature panicked, bolting forward with a bleat. Such was its strength, born of terror, that the old man was flung backward over the low seat back, losing his grip on the traces. The wagon jumped under him and then slewed to one side, spilling him from it. He struck the road in a cloud of dust and crazed bees. The rider, on his third horse since fleeing the city, arrived at this precise moment. Skill and instinct led him round the mule and wagon, but the sudden appearance of the farmer directly in the horse's path occurred so swiftly, so unexpectedly, that neither he nor his mount had the time to react. Four legs clipped the farmer, breaking a collarbone and striking the man's head with stunning impact. The horse stumbled, slammed down onto its chest, and its rider was thrown forward. Her uncle had removed his helm some time that day. The heat was fierce, after all, and while it was debatable whether that made any difference, Abrastel suspected, or perhaps chose to believe, that if he'd been wearing it, he might well have survived the fall. As it was, his neck was snapped clean. She had studied those events with almost fanatic obsession. Her agents had travelled out to that remote region of the kingdom. Interviews with sons and relatives, and indeed the old farmer himself, who had miraculously survived, though now prone to the falling sickness, all seeking to map out with precision the sequence of events. In truth, she'd cared neither way for the fate of her uncle. The man had been a fool. No, what fascinated and indeed haunted her was that such a convergence of chance events could so perfectly conspire to take a man's life. From this one example, Abrastol quickly comprehended that such patterns existed everywhere and could be assembled for virtually every accidental death. People spoke of ill luck, mischance. They spoke of unruly spirits and vengeful gods, and some spoke of the most terrible truth of all, that the world and all life in it was nothing but a blind concatenation of random occurrences. Cause and effect did nothing but map out the absurdity of things before which even the gods were helpless. Some truths could haunt, colder, crueler than any ghost. Some truths were shaped by a mouth open in horror. When she stumbled from her tent, guards and aides swarming round her, there had been no time for musings, no time for thoughts on past obsessions. There had been nothing but the moment itself, red as blood in the eyes, loud as a howl trapped inside a skull. Her daughter had found her. Falash, lost somewhere inside a savage storm at sea, had bargained with a god, and as the echoes of cries from drowning sailors sounded faint and hollow beneath the shrieking winds, the god had opened a path. Ancient, appalling, brutal as a rape. In the tears swimming before Abrastel's eyes, her 14th daughter's face found shape, as if rising from unfathomable depths, and Abrastel had tasted the salt sea on her tongue, had felt the numbing cold of its immortal hunger.
"Mother, remember the tale of your uncle. The wagon crawls, the mule's head nods, thunder in the distance. Remember the tale as you told it to me, as you live it each and every day. Mother, the high road is the wastelands, and I can hear the swarm. I can hear it."
Elder gods were reluctant, belligerent oracles. In the grip of such a power, no mortal could speak in freedom. Clarity was defied, precision denied. Only twisted words and images could come forth. Only misdirection played true. But Falash was clever, the cleverest of all her beloved daughters. And so Abrastel understood. She comprehended the warning. The moment vanished, but the pain of that assault remained. Weeping blood-clouded tears, she struggled and pushed her way through panicked staff and bodyguards, stumbled outside, naked above the hips, her fiery hair snarled and matted with sweat. On her skin the salt already rimed, and she stank as would a body pulled up from the sea bottom. Arms held out to keep everyone away, she stood, gasping, head hanging down, struggling to recover her breath. And, finally, she managed to speak.
"Specs! Get me specs! Now!"
Gilk warriors gathered in their kin groups, checking weapons and gear. Warchief Spax stood watching, scratching his beard, the sour ale from the cask the night before swirling ominously in his belly. Or maybe it was the goat shank, or that fist-sized brick of bitter chocolate, something he'd never seen nor tasted before arriving in Balkando. But if the good gods shat, it was surely chocolate. He saw Firehair's runner long before the man arrived. One of those scrawny court mice, all red-faced from the exertion, his quivering lip visible from 10 paces away. His own scouts had informed him that they were perhaps a day away from the bone hunters. They'd made good time, damn near impoverishing Safinan's traders in the process. And for all his bravado, Spax was forced to admit that both the Kundril burned tears and the perish were as tough as a cactus-eater's tongue. Almost as tough as his own Bargast. Common opinion had it that armies with trains were slow beasts, even on the most level ground. But clearly neither Gaul of the burned tears nor Krukhava of the perish paid any heed to common opinion. Glancing at his own warriors one more time before the runner arrived, he saw that they were showing fatigue. Not enough to worry him, of course. One more day, after all, and then Abrastel could have her parley with the Malazans and they could all turn round and head home at a far more reasonable pace.
"War Chief, what's got her excited now?"
Spax asked, ever pleased to bait these fops. But this time the young man did not react to the over-familiarity with the usual expression of shock. In fact, he continued as if he'd not heard Spax.
"The Queen demands your presence, at once!"
Normally, even this command would have elicited a sarcastic comment or two, but Spax finally registered the runner's fear.
"Lead on, then," he replied in a growl.
Dressed now in armor, Queen Abrastel was in no mood for banter, and she'd already said enough to the Gilk war chief to keep him silent as he rode at her side towards the Perish camp. The morning's light was clawing details down the furrowed scape of the mountains to the west. Dust hung over the raw tracks leading to and from the Savinand border, and already lines of wagons and carriages were streaming out from the three camps, beds empty, barring chests of coin, merchant guards and prostitutes. They would be back out here and waiting, she knew, for the return of the Evertine Legion.
They might have a long wait.
She had told Spax of the sending, had registered with little surprise his scowl. The Barghast knew enough to have no doubt about such things. He had even commented that his own warlocks and witches had been complaining of weakness and blindness, as if the Barghast gods had been driven away, or did not possess the strength to manifest in the wastelands. As the horses were being readied, he'd spoken of the belief in convergence, and she had been impressed to discover that behind his white skull paint and turtle-shelled armor, this barbarian knew of the world beyond his own tribe and his own people. The notion of power drawing power, however, did not seem to draw close to her sense of what was coming.
"You say that such forces are fated to meet, Spax, but this is not the same."
"How do you mean, Highness?"
"Is chance the weapon of fate? One might say so, I imagine, but what is drawing close before us, Spax, is something crueler. Random, unpredictable, stupid, in fact. It is the curse of being in the wrong place at the wrong time."
He'd chewed on that for a moment, and then he said,
"Will you seek to turn them away? Fire Hare, this Krughava is rooted like a mountain. Her path is the river of its melting crown. You will fail, I think."
"I know, Spax, and this forces upon me a dire decision, doesn't it?"
But he would not see it that way, and he didn't. She was certain of it, though he'd said nothing, and now the horses were brought forward and they mounted up and kicked the beasts into a quick canter, and then, once beyond the Evertine pickets, into a gallop. Such a pace did not invite conversation beyond a few terse words at best. Neither bothered. Perish pickets marked them and the banner rising from the socket on Abrastel's saddle. They quickly and efficiently cleared a path straight to the camp center. As they rode into the main avenue between officer tents, Abrastel and Spax found themselves the subject of growing interest, as soldiers formed lines to either side to watch them pass. Certain moments, fraught and crowded, could spread a chilling fever. A short time later, they reined in at the headquarters of the Grey Helms. The mortal sword Krughava and shield anvil Tanakalian stood awaiting them, kitted in full armor, as was their habit. Abrastel was the first to slip down from her winded horse. The Gilk followed a moment later. Krughava bowed with a tilt of her head.
"Queen, you are welcome among the Perish. Forget the formal shit," Abrastel cut in. "Your command tent, if you please."
A flicker of something in the woman's hard eyes, and then she gestured to the tent behind her. Spax said,
"Might want to summon Gaul."
"Already done,"
Tanakalian replied with a half-smile that did not belong to this moment.
"It should not be long."
Abrastel frowned at the shield anvil, and then swept past him and the mortal sword, trailed a step behind by Spax. A few moments later, the four were in the tent's main chamber. Krughava ushered her aides away and then sent the guards to the tent's outer perimeter. Drawing off her gauntlets, the mortal sword faced Abrastel.
"Highness, the agenda is yours.
Will you await War Leader Gaul before beginning?
No. He's a smart man. He'll work it out. Mortal Sword, we find ourselves in a storm that can only be seen from the outside. We ourselves as yet sense nothing, for we are close to its heart.
She glanced to the shield anvil and then back to Krughava.
Your priests and priestesses are in difficulty. Do you deny it?
I do not, Krughava replied.
Good. Your allies are but a day away.
Half a day, if necessary, Krughava said.
As you say.
Abrastel hesitated. At that moment, War Leader Gaul arrived, sweeping through the curtains of the doorway. He was breathing hard, broad face beaded with sweat.
You intend to leave us this day,
Tanakalian said, glaring at the queen. Abrastel frowned.
I have said no such thing, Shield Anvil.
Forgive my brother, said Krughava. He is precipitate. Highness, what would you warn us against?
I shall use the term Spax has given me. One you will understand at once, or so I am led to believe. The word is convergence.
Something came alight in Krughava's eyes, and Abrastel could almost see the woman straightening, swelling as if to meet this moment.
So be it.
A moment, Tanakalian said, his eyes widening. Highness, this is not the place. Rather, you must be wrong. That time is yet to arrive. It is far away, in fact. I cannot see how...
That will be enough,
Krughava interrupted, her face darkening.
Unless, sir, you can speak plainly of knowledge you alone possess. We await you.
You don't understand.
Correct.
The man looked half-panicked. Abrastel's unease regarding Tanakalian, which she had first discovered outside the tent, now deepened. What hid within this young soldier-priest? He seemed somehow knocked awry. The shield anvil drew a breath and then said,
My vision is no clearer than anyone else's, not here in this place. But all that I sense of the coming convergence tells me that it does not await us in the wastelands.
Krughava seemed to be bristling with anger, the first time Abrastel had seen such a thing in the Mortal Sword.
Brother Tanakalian, you are not the arbiter of destiny, no matter the vast breadth of your ambition. On this day, and in the matter before us, you would do best to witness. We are without a destry hunt. We cannot help but be blind to our future.
She faced Abrastel.
The grey helms shall strike for the bone hunters. We shall find them this day. It may be that they will need our help. It may be that we will need theirs. After all, to stand in the heart of a storm is, as you say, to be blind to all dangers, yet safe from none.
Gaul spoke for the first time.
The Khandril shall ride as the tip of the spear, Mortal Sword. We shall send swifts out ahead, and so be the first to sight our allies. If they be in dire need, word shall wing back.
That is well, and I thank you, War Leader, said Krughava. Highness, thank you for your warning.
We are coming with you.
Spax turned, his face expressing shock, but the Mortal Sword nodded.
The glory that is within you, Highness, refutes all disguise. Yet I humbly suggest that you change your mind, that you heed the objections your guilt commander is so eager to voice. This is not your destiny, after all. It belongs to the Bone Hunters, and to the Khandril, and to the Perish Grey Helms.
The Gilk, Abrastel replied, are under my command. I believe you have misapprehended Warchief Spax. He is surprised, yes, but so long as he and his Barghast bed themselves in my coin, they are mine to lead.
It is so, said Spax. Mortal Sword, you have indeed misapprehended me. The Gilk are without fear. We are the fist of the White-Face Barghast.
And if that fist drives into a wasp's nest? Tanakalian asked. Abrastel started. Spax bared his teeth.
We are not children who die at the sting, Shield Anvil. If we should stir awake such a nest, look to your own.
This is wrong. Enough, snapped Krughava. Shield Anvil, prepare to embrace all who may come to fall this day. That is your task, your responsibility. If you so cherish the gleam of politics, then you should have stayed in the kingdom shores of Perish. We who are here refused those games. We left our homes, our place of birth. We left our families and our loved ones. We left the intrigue and the deceit and the court dances of death. Will you now presume to broach that bitter wine? Go, sir, harness your strength. Face pale, Tanakalian bowed to Abrastel, Spax, and Gaul, and then left. Highness, Krughava said, you risk too much.
I know, she replied.
And yet?
She nodded. And yet?
Damned women! It's all women!
She reined in her mount atop a low hill, eyes scanning the south. Was there dust on the horizon? Possibly. Kiswear arched to ease the ache in her lower back. Her thighs were on fire, as if dipped in acid. She was low on water, and the horse beneath her was half dead.
Fucking adjunct! Lostara Yil! That bitch of a sister! It's not fair!
She had been undecided, but no longer. Oh, she'd find the fools, the pompous Perish and the rutting Cundril who'd weep at a broken pot. She'd deliver all the useless pleas for help to Krughava, another hood-damned woman, and then she'd be done with it.
I'm not going back. I've deserted, right? I'm riding right through them. Safinand. I can get lost there. It's ringed in with mountains. I don't care how squalid it is, it'll do.
What else did they expect from her? Some heroic return at the head of two armies, riding to the rescue, snatching them all back from the very gates of Hood? That kind of rubbish belonged to Cinta, or even Masangilani, who was riding to find an ally that might not even exist. Yes, leave the legend to that northern slut. She had all the necessary traits, after all. Kisware was carved from softer stuff, not bronze, more like wax. And the world was heating up. They'd saluted her on her way. They'd decided to put all their trust and faith in her.
And I will find them. That is a dust cloud. I can see it now. I can reach them, say whatever I need to say. The adjunct says, O mortal sword, that betrayal does not suit the Perish, nor the Cundril. Come to her, she asks. The adjunct says the sword's for wearing and wielding, not sitting on. It's a weapon. It's not courage, no matter how straight up it holds you. The adjunct says there is a betrayer among you, and by that betrayer's words you doom the bone hunters. The adjunct says the blood is on your hands, you frigid cow.
Find whatever means, Cinta had said. Use whatever you need to use. Shame them, shit on them, spit on them. Or turn sly and build up the fires until their boots burn. Blind them by reflecting the blazing sun of their own egos. Beg, plead, drop to your knees and suck them dry.
Use your wiles, Kisware. It's what you do best.
Guards, she hated them all. That knowing look in their eyes, that acceptance of everything that wasn't good within her. Yes, they knew she'd not come back, and they didn't care. She was expendable, whipped like an arrow, and once it struck, why, it was spent, a shattered thing lying on the ground. So, a broken arrow she would be. Fine. Why not? They expected nothing more, did they? Kisware kicked her horse into motion. It answered reluctantly.
Not much further, she said as she worked it into a loose canter. See those riders? Cundril. Almost there. I don't need to convince them of anything. They're on their way already. I just need to add a few spurs to their boots. Who knows? Maybe it's what Krughava goes for anyway. She has that look about her, I think. Here, sweetie, I bring spikes and whips.
The riders of the Vedith Swift, drawing towards the lone soldier, were commanded by Rafala, who held sharp eyes on the stranger. A Malazan, to be sure, she could see. On a tired horse, she tasted the excitement, proof that something was happening. yet another clench of history's jaws, and no struggle could pull one free. Gaul had sent them out ahead, riding hard. Find the bone hunters, ride into their column and speak to the adjunct. Tell her to wait, or indeed to angle her march southward. The terrible gods were gathering. She could see it in the high clouds building to the southwest, tumbling down off the mountains. The armies must come together and so stand as one, facing down those gods. Such a moment awaited them. Adjunct Taveray, commander of the Bone Hunters, Gaul, war leader of the Cundril Burned Tears, Krughava, mortal sword of the wolves, and Abrastel, queen of Bolcando and commander of the Evertine Legion.
Oh, and the Gilk, too. Those Barghast know how to roll in the furs, don't they just? I won't cringe with them on one flank, that's for certain.
What sought them in the wastelands? Some pathetic tribe, no doubt. Not much else could survive out here. No secret kingdom or empire, that was obvious. The land was dead, after all. Well, they would crush whoever the fools were and then march on, seeking whatever fate the adjunct knew awaited them all in distant Colance. Rafala only hoped she'd get the chance to bloody her blade. The Malazan soldier was slowing her exhausted mount, as if content to let the Cundril horses do most of the work. Well enough. The Dalhanese did not look very comfortable on that saddle. For decades, the Malazans had been clever in building their armies. They used horse tribes to create their cavalry, mountain dwellers for their scouts and skirmishers, and farmers for their infantry. City folk for sappers and coastal folk for marines and sailors. But things had since grown confused. The Dalhanese did not belong on horses.
No matter. I remember the Wiccans. I'd barely a month of bleeding then, but I saw them. They humbled us all. And now it is the Cundril's turn to do the same.
She gestured to slow the riders behind her and continued ahead to rein in before the Malazan.
I am Rafala. Happy for you, the woman cut in. Just take me to Gaul and Krughava, and switch me to a fresher horse. This one's done. How many days away?
Rafala asked as one of her corporals took charge of switching mounts. The Malazan dropped down from her horse with some difficulty.
Who? Oh, not far, I should think. I got lost the first night. Thought I could see the mountains on my right. Turned out those were clouds. I've been riding south and west for 2 days now. Is that fool ready yet?
Rafala scowled.
He gives you his finest battle horse, soldier. Well, I ain't paying.
Wincing, the woman climbed into the saddle.
Gods, couldn't you do with some decent padding? I'm sitting on bones here. Not my fault, drawled Rafala. If you let your muscles get too soft. Let's ride then, soldier, and see if you can keep up with me.
To her swift, she said,
Continue on. I will provide her escort and then return to you.
And then they were off. The swift resumed riding northward. Rafala and the Malazan struck southward, and trailing at ever greater distance behind them, the lone corporal followed on the spent horse.
Well, thought Kiswear as she and Rafala approached the vanguard, this will make it easy.
A forest of banners marked the presence of a clash, an old Malaz Island joke, of commanders. She could say what needed saying once and then be done with it. It was obvious to her that disaster awaited them all.
Too many women holding skillets here.
She'd always preferred men to women, as friends, as lovers, as officers. Men liked to keep things simple, none of that absurd oversensitivity, reacting to every damned expression or glance or gesture, none of that stewing over some careless passing comment, and, most importantly, none of that vicious backstabbing and poison cups so smilingly given. No, she'd long since learned all the nasty lessons of her own gender. She'd seen enough eyes crawling up and down her body and judging the clothes she wore, the cut of her hair, the man at her side. She'd seen women carving up others when those ones weren't looking, eyes like blades.
Snip, slice, snip.
And wasn't it true, beyond all challenge, that women who preferred the company of men were the most hated women of all? Too many commanders with tits in this mob.
Look at Gaul,
He's under siege behind those tattooed tears. And that Bargast, no wonder he's hiding his face behind all that paint. You can go back now, Rafala, Kiswere said. I won't get lost. I need your horse, Malazan. So I am to walk from now on? The young Kundril looked surprised. Walk where? Kiswere scowled. They rode through the scattered line of outriders and drew up before the vanguard. The mounted commanders made no concession to their arrival, continuing on at a steady trot, forcing Rafala and Kiswere to swing round and fall in step beside them. That attitude annoyed Kiswere. When was the last time they'd even seen each other? Rafala spoke.
Wali de Gaulle, I bring you a Malazan messenger.
And then she said to Kiswere,
I will go and find you another horse.
Good, don't take too long.
With a flat look, Rafala pulled her mount round and headed into the trailing columns. A red-haired woman Kiswere had never seen before was the first to address her in the trader tongue.
Malazan, where are your kin?
My kin?
Your fellow soldiers.
Not far, I think. You should reach them today, especially at this pace.
Marine, said Krugava, what word do you bring us?
Kiswere glanced about, noting the various staff officers clumped round the commanders.
Can we get a little more private here, Mortal Sword? You and War Leader Gaul, I mean,
Queen Abrastel of Balkando and War Chief Spax of the Gilk White Faces have allied their forces with our own, sir. This said, I will send our staffs a short distance away.
She faced the Queen.
Acceptable, Highness?
Abrastel's face registered distaste.
Oh, yes, they're worse than flies. Go, all of you.
20 or more riders pulled away from the vanguard, leaving only Krughava, Tanakalian, Gaul, the Queen, and Spax.
Better?
Krughava asked. Kiswere drew a deep breath. She was too tired to have to work at this.
Among the seers serving the adjunct, Mortal Sword, I can say this no other way. The threat of betrayal was judged to be very real. I was sent to confirm the alliance.
The Mortal Sword went deathly pale. Kiswere saw the foreign queen cast a sharp look at the young shield anvil Tanakalian.
What? Fuck, they know more of this than I do. Seems the threat is real after all. Sister, you have eyes that see what others do not. No wonder I'm always running away from you.
Wali de Gaulle was the first to respond.
What is your name, soldier? Kiswere, 10th Squad, 3rd Company, 8th Legion.
Kiswere. Spirit, no. How you Malazans can make a name an invitation never ceases to delight me. I will answer the adjunct's fear as the Kundril must. We shall advance ahead and ride with you with all haste, and so rejoin the bone hunters as soon as possible.
Sir, said Krughava, there will be no betrayal from the parish. See the pace of our march. We are apprised of imminent danger, and so hasten to reach the adjunct's army. It is our added fortune that the Balkando Queen leads her Evertine Legion, and the Gilk has vowed to give us whatever aid we may require. Tell me, are the bone hunters beset? What enemy has appeared out of the wastelands to so assail them?
You get around to asking this now? As of 2 days past, Mortal Sword, our only enemy was clouds of biting flies, Kiswere replied.
Yet you were dispatched to find us, Krughava observed.
I was.
Therefore, the Mortal Sword continued, some apprehension of danger, beyond that of possible betrayal, must exist to justify such urgency.
Kiswere shrugged.
There is little more I can tell you, Mortal Sword.
You ride all this way seeking nothing but reassurance?
At Gaul's question, Kiswere glanced away for a moment.
Yes, it must seem odd to you, all of you. I have no answer. The alliance was perceived to be in jeopardy. That is all I know of the matter.
No one seemed satisfied.
Too bad. What can I say? My sister's got a bad feeling. Fit keeps throwing up, and the only high priest on Tavare's staff has been drunk ever since Letharas, and those flies got a vicious bite.
Rafala returned, leading a saddled horse, a bay mare with a witless look to her. She led the beast up alongside Kiswere.
"Climb over, if you can."
Scowling, Kiswere kicked her boots free of the stirrups and drew her right leg over. Rafala pulled the mare a step ahead, and the Malazan set her right foot into the stirrup, rose, reaching for the Seven Cities saddle horn, and then pulled herself astride the broad-backed beast. The transfer was smooth, and Rafala's lips tightened, as if the notion of a compliment threatened nausea. She dropped back to come up behind Kiswere, taking the reins of her warrior's battle horse. Moments later, she was leading that mount away. Kiswere looked over to see Gaul grinning.
"I know just the place," he said.
The Barghast barked a laugh.
"Ride with the Kundrel, then," Krughava said to her. "Lead them to the bone hunters." "Gods below!
How to get out of this?"
"I fear I would only slow them, mortal sword. While this mount is fresh, I, alas, am not."
"Ever slept between two horses?" Gaul asked.
"Excuse me?"
"A slung hammock, Kiswere, with tent poles to keep the beasts apart. This is how we carry wounded whilst on the move."
All these women looking at her, knowing, seeing what the men did not.
"Showing all your sharp little teeth, are you? So delighted to see me trapped."
To Gaul, she said,
"If it comes to that need, war leader, I will tell you."
"Very good," the warrior replied. "Then let us ride to my burned tears. Highness, mortal sword, when next we meet, it shall be in the adjunct's command tent. Until then, travel well, and may the gods be blinded by your dust."
Kiswere set off with the war leader, and they cut eastward and slightly arrears to where the main mass of the horse warriors rode in loose formations. Once clear of the vanguard, Gaul said,
"My apologies, soldier. I see that you have discarded your uniform, and the last place you want to go is back to where you came from. But the mortal sword is a stern woman. Not one perish grey helm has ever deserted, and should one ever try, I doubt they'd manage to live long. She would have acted on the adjunct's behalf, no matter the consequences. In every army imaginable, the bone hunters included, I'm sure, desertion is a death sentence."
"Not stupid after all. I was commanded to give nothing away whilst riding alone, war leader, and so I wore nothing that could be construed to be a uniform."
"Ah, I see. Then I must apologize a second time, Kiswere."
She shrugged.
"My sister walks in that column, war leader. How could I not seek to return as quickly as possible?"
"Of course. I understand now."
He fell into something like an amiable silence as they approached the burned tears. She wondered if he'd been fooled. True, simple wasn't necessarily the same as stupid, after all. She'd given reasonable answers with only a hint of affront.
"Aye, a little dignity before the insult, as my mother used to say, makes a fine weapon."
"She will be delighted to see you again, I am sure."
Kiswere shot the man a searching look, but said nothing. Columnar clouds heaped the western horizon ahead, and Masangelani could feel a cool breeze freshening against her face. She had taken to spelling her horse every three or so leagues, but the animal was wearying nonetheless. It was this detail that killed most deserters, she knew. The pursuing troop would be leading spare mounts, whilst the fool on the fly generally had nothing but the lone beast he or she was riding. Of course, no one was chasing her, which, oddly enough, did nothing to assuage her guilt. She belonged with her squad, sharing mouthfuls of the same dust, cursing at the same whining flies, and if things were as bad as people had intimated, she wanted to be there, right beside her friends, to face whatever arrived. Instead, here she was, hunting for what? For the tenth time this day, she reached to brush her hand against the small leather pouch tied to her belt, confirming it was still there. Lose it, she knew, and this whole mission was a failure.
"It probably already is, anyway. I can't find what I can't see, pouch or no pouch."
She could see the rain ahead and not much else. grey-blue sheets angling down on the sliding wind, the curtains sweeping across the land. More misery to add to this overflowing kitty.
This is pointless. I'm looking for ghosts. Real ghosts? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe just the ghosts living in the adjunct's head, those old hoary hags of lost allegiances and forgotten promises. Tavore, you expect too much. You always did.
Rain spat into her face, swarmed the ground until it seemed the dust danced like crazed ants. In moments, all visibility beyond a few dozen paces vanished. She was now more blinded to what she was looking for than at any other time. The world mocked.
Pointless. I'm going back.
Five figures stood before her, grey as the rain, dull as the muddy dust, sudden as a dream. Cursing, she reined in, fought with her panicking horse. Gravel skittered. The beast snorted, hoofs stamping in the sluicing streams and puddles.
We are who you seek.
She could not tell which one the voice came from. She grasped the pouch containing the seething dirt, gift of the Atricida Aranict, and gasped at its sudden heat. They were corpses, one and all. Talani Mas. Battered, broken, limbs missing, weapons dangling from seemingly senseless hands of bone wrapped in blackened skin. Long hair, dirty blonde and rust red, was plastered down round their desiccated faces, where rainwater ran like eternal tears. Breathing hard, Masangelani studied them for a time, and then she said,
"Just five of you? No others?"
"We are who remain."
She thought the one speaking was the one standing closest to her, but could not be certain. The rain was a roar around them all, the wind moaning as if trapped in an enormous cave.
"There should be more," she insisted. "There was a vision."
"We are the ones you seek."
"Are you summoned, then?"
"We are."
And the lead Talani Mas pointed to the pouch at her hip.
"Thenik is incomplete."
"Which one of you is Thenik?"
The creature on the outside right stepped forward. Every bone looked to be shattered, with splinters and chips missing. A crazed web of cracks broke up its face beneath a helm made from the skull of some unknown beast. Fumbling with the ties, Masan finally managed to pull free the pouch. She tossed it over. Thenik made no move to catch it. The pouch landed at its feet, sank into a puddle.
"Thenik thanks you," said the speaker. "I am Urugal the Woven. With me is Thenik the Shattered, Barok Soft Voice, Kalb the Silent Hunter, and Halad the Giant. We are the Unbound, who once numbered seven. Now we are five. Soon we shall be seven again. There are fallen kin in this land. Some refuse the enemy. Some will not follow the one who leads nowhere."
Frowning, Masangelani shook her head.
"You've lost me. No matter. I was sent to find you. Now we must return to the Bone Hunters, my army. It's where..."
"Yes. She is the hunter of bones, indeed," Urugal said. "Her hunt is soon complete. Ride on your beast. We shall follow."
She wiped water from her eyes.
"Thought there'd be more of you," she muttered, gathering her reins and dragging her horse round. "Can you keep up?" she asked over one shoulder.
"You are the banner before us, mortal."
Masangelani's frown deepened. She'd heard something like that before, somewhere. 4 leagues to the northwest, Onos Tulan suddenly halted, the first time in days. Something not far away had brushed his senses, but now it was gone.
"Talani Mas, strangers!"
He hesitated as the more distant and altogether different wave of compulsion returned, insistent. Desperate. He knew its flavor, had known its flavor for weeks now. This was what Tok the Younger had sought, what he had demanded of the first sword. But he was no longer the friend Tok once knew, just as Tok was no longer the friend Tool himself remembered. The past was both dead and alive, but between them it was simply dead. The summons was Malazan. It was the claim of alliance as had been forged long ago between the Emperor and the Logros T'Lani Mas. Somewhere to the east a Malazan force waited. Danger approached, and the T'Lani Mas must stand with allies of old. Such was duty. Such was the ink of honor, written so deep as to stain the immortal soul. He defied the command. Duty was dead. Honor was a lie. See what the Sinan had done to his wife, his children. Mortality was the realm of deceit, the sordid room of horror hid in the house of the living, its walls crusted and streaked, dark stains on the warped floor. Dust crowded the corners, dust made of skin flakes and snarls of hair, nail clippings and clots of phlegm. Every house had its secret room, where memories howled in the thick silence. He had once been of the Logros. He was no longer. He had one duty now, and it was truly lifeless. Nothing would turn him aside, not the wishes of Tok the Younger, not the mad aspirations of Olar Ethil. Oh yes, he knew she was close, far too clever to come within his reach, knowing well that he would kill her, destroy her utterly. Demands and expectations descended like that distant rain to the southwest, but it all washed from him and left no trace. There had been a time when Onos Tulan had chosen to stand close to mortal humans, when he had turned his back upon his own kind, and in so doing he had rediscovered the wonders of gentler emotions, the sensual pleasures of camaraderie and friendship, the gifts of humor and love, and then, at last, he had achieved the rebirth of his life, a true life. That man had taken that life, for reasons even he could barely understand, a flush of empathy, the fullest cost of humanity paid out in the blade pushing into his chest. Strength fell away, in some other direction than the one taken by his sagging body. He had looked out on the world until all meaning drained of color. They had done unspeakable things to his corpse. Desecration was the wound delivered upon the dead, and the living did so with careless conceit. No, they would never lie motionless on the ground. They would never rise from cold meat and bones to witness all that was done to the body that had been the only home they had ever known. It did not even occur to them that the soul could suffer from phantom agony, the body like a severed hand. And his adopted kin had simply looked on, stone-eyed, telling themselves that Tool's soul was gone from that mangled thing being dismembered on the bloody grasses, that the laughter and mockery could not reach unseen ears. Could they even have guessed that love alone was of such power that Tool's soul had also witnessed the hobbling of his wife and the rapes that followed? That, unable to find his children, he had at last set out for the underworld, to find his beloved Hetan, his family, to escape with finality the cruel spikes of the mortal realm?
"And you turned me away, Tok, my friend. You turned me back to this."
He was not that man, not anymore. He was not the First Sword, either. He was not a warrior of the Logros. He was none of these things. He was a weapon. Onos Tulan resumed his march. The summons meant nothing. Nothing to him, at any rate. Besides, in a very short time, it would cease forevermore. There was no road leading them through the wastelands, no road to take them to their destiny, whatever destiny that happened to be. Accordingly, the companies marched in loose units of 6 squads, and each company was separated from the others, yet close enough to those of their own legion to link if need demanded. Groups of 6 squads were arranged as befitted their function. Marines at the core, the mixed units of heavies next, and outside of them the medium regular infantry, with skirmishers forming the outermost curtain. The massive column that was the supply train forged its own route, hundreds of ox-drawn wagons and bawling herds of goats, sheep, cattle and rodara that would soon begin to starve in this lifeless land. Herd dogs loped round their charges, and beyond them the riders entrusted with driving the beasts kept a watchful eye for any strays that might elude the dogs, although none did. Flanking wings of lancers and mounted archers protected the sides of the column. Units of scouts rode well ahead of the vanguard, while others ranged on the south flank and arrears, but not to the north, where marched the legions and brigades under command of Bryce Bedict. His columns were arranged in tighter formation, replete with its own supply train, almost as big as the Malazan one. Blue Rose cavalry rode in wide flank, sending scouts deep into the wastes in a constant cycle of riders and horses. Mounted, Commander Bryce Bedict rode to the inside of his column, close to its head. Off to his right, at a distance of about 200 paces, were the Malazans. Riding beside him on his left was Aranicht, and they were in turn trailed by a half dozen messengers. The heat was savage, and the water wagons were fast being drained of their stores. The leathery herds of Myrid and Rodara could manage this land better than sheep and cattle, but before long even they would begin to suffer. The meals at the beginning of this trek across the wastelands would be heavy on meat, Bryce knew, but then things would change. What lay beyond this forbidding stretch of dead ground? From what he could glean, and rumours served in place of any direct knowledge, there was a desert of some sort, yet one known to possess caravan tracks, and beyond that the plains of the Alan people, a possible offshoot of the All. The Alan plains bordered on the east the kingdoms and city-states of Colance and the Palacia Confederacy. The notion of taking an army across first the wastelands and then a desert struck Bryce as sheer madness. Yet somehow the very impossibility of it perversely appealed to him, and had they been at war with those distant kingdoms, it would have signified a bold invasion sure to achieve legendary status. Of course, as far as he knew, there was no war and no cause for war. There was nothing but ominous silence from Colance. Perhaps indeed this was an invasion, but if so, it was not a just one. No known atrocities demanding retribution, nor a declaration of hostilities from an advancing empire to be answered. We know nothing. What happens to the soul of a soldier who knows he or she is in the wrong? That they are the aggressors, the bringers of savagery and violence? The notion worried Bryce, for the answers that arrived were grim ones. Something breaks inside, something howls, something dreams of suicide. And as commander, he would be to blame, as much as his brother, Tehol. For they were the leaders, the ones in charge, the ones using the lives of thousands of people as mere playing pieces on some stained board. It is one thing to lead soldiers into war, and it is one thing to send them into a war. But it is, it seems to me, wholly another to lead and send them into a war that is itself a crime. Are we to be so indifferent to the suffering we will inflict on our own people and upon innocent victims in unknown lands? In his heart dwelt the names of countless lost gods. Many had broken the souls of their worshippers. Many others had been broken by the mortal madness of senseless wars, of slaughter and pointless annihilation. Of the two, the former suffered a torment of breathtaking proportions. There was, in the very end, there must be, judgment, not upon the fallen, not upon the victims, but upon those who had orchestrated their fates. Of course, he did not know if such a thing was true. Yes, he could sense the suffering among those gods whose names he held within him, but perhaps it was his own knowledge that engendered such anguish, and that anguish belonged to his own soul, cursed to writhe in an empathic trap. Perhaps he was doing nothing more than forcing his own sense of righteous punishment upon those long-dead gods. And if so, by what right could he do such a thing? Troubling notions. Yet onward his legions marched, seeking answers to questions the adjunct alone knew. This went beyond trust, beyond even faith. This was a sharing of insanity, and in its maelstrom they were all snared, no matter what fate awaited them. I should be better than this, shouldn't I? I lead, but can I truly protect when I do not know what awaits us? Commander! Startled from his dark thoughts, he straightened in his saddle and looked over to his Atreseda. My apologies. Were you speaking? Aranicht wiped sweat from an oddly pale face, hesitated. I believe you are struck with heat. Dismount, and I will send for...
No, sir.
Atreseda. He saw the wash of terror and panic rise into her face.
We are in the wrong place. Commander, Bryce, we have to get out of here. We have to... We are in the wrong place.
At that moment, thunder hammered through the earth, a drum roll that went on and on. Dust storm or an army? Keneb squinted in the bright glare.
Corporal? Sir?
Ride to the vanguard. I think we've sighted the Kundral and Perish.
Yes, sir.
As the rider cantered off, Keneb glanced to his left. Bryce's columns had edged slightly ahead. The Malazans had been anything but spry this day. Moods were dark, foul. Discipline was crumbling. Knots of acid in his stomach had awakened him this morning, painful enough to start tears in his eyes. The worst of it had passed, but he knew he had to find a capable healer soon. A sudden wind gusted into his face, smelling of something bitter. He saw Blistig riding out from his legion, angling towards him. Now what? Head pounding, Banaskar trudged alongside a heavily laden wagon. He was parched inside, as parched as this wretched land. He held his gaze on the train of oxen laboring in their yokes, the flicking tails, the swarming flies, the fine coat of dust rising up their haunches and flanks. Hoofs thumped on the hard ground. Hearing some muttering from the troop marching a few paces to his right, he lifted his eyes. The sky had suddenly acquired a sickly hue. Wind buffeted him, tasting of grit, stinging his eyes.
Damn dust storm! She'll have to call a halt! She'll have to...
No, that color was wrong. Mouth dry as stone, he felt a tightening in his throat, a pain in his chest.
Gods, no! That wind is the breath of a warren! It's... Oh, worm of autumn, no!
He staggered as convulsions took him. Half blinded in pain, he fell onto his knees. Sergeant Sunrise dropped his kit bag and hurried over to the fallen priest's side.
Ramjags, get Bevedict! He's looking bad here!
He's a drunk, snapped Sweet Lard.
No, looks worse than that. Ramjags!
I'm going.
Thunder shook the ground beneath them. Cries rose from countless beasts. Something seemed to ripple through the ranks of soldiery, an unease, an instant of uncertainty stung awake. Voices shouted questions, but no answers came back, and the confusion rose yet higher. Sweet Lard stumbled against Sunrise, almost knocking him over as he crouched beside the priest. He could hear the old man mumbling, saw his head rock as if buffeted by unseen blows. Something spattered the back of Sunrise's left hand, and he looked down to see drops of blood.
Erence, push! Who stabbed him? I didn't see.
Someone knifed him?
Sweet Lard demanded.
I ain't... Here, help me get him round.
The thunder redoubled. Oxen lowed. Wheels rocked side to side with alarming creaks. Sunrise looked skyward, saw nothing but a solid golden veil of dust.
We got us a damned storm! Where's Bevedict? Sweet, go find him, will you?
Thought you wanted my help.
Wait, get Hedge, get the commander. This guy's sweating blood all over his skin. Right out through the pores. Hurry!
Something's happening,
Sweet Lard said, now standing directly over him. Her tone chilled Sunrise to the core. Captain Ruthen Gud drew a ragged breath, savagely pushing the nausea away, and the terror that flooded through him in its wake had him reaching for his sword.
Roots of the Azath! What was that?
But he could see nothing. The dust had slung an ochre canopy across the sky, and on all sides soldiers were suddenly milling, as if they had lost their way. But nothing lay ahead, just empty stretches of land. Teeth bared, Ruthen Gud kicked his skittish horse forward, rising in his stirrups. His sword was in his hand, steam whirling from its white, strangely translucent blade. He caught sight of it from the corner of his eye.
Hood's fist!
the skeins of sorcery that had disguised the weapon, in layers thick and tangled with centuries of magic, had been torn away. Deathly cold burned his hand.
"She answers! She answers! What?"
He pulled free of the column. A seething line had appeared along a ridge of hills to the southeast. The thunder rolled on, drawing ever closer. Iron glittered as if tipped with diamond shards, like teeth gnawing through the summits of those hills. The swarming motion pained his eyes. He saw riders peeling out from the vanguard, parley flags whipping from upended spears. Closer to hand, foot soldiers staring at him and his damned weapon, others stumbling from the bitter cold streaming in his wake. His own armor-clad thighs and the back of his horse were rimed in frost.
"She answers, as she has never answered before. Gods below, spawn of the Azath. I smell... Oh, gods, no."
"Form up! Marines, form up! First line on the ridge! Skirmishers! Get out of there! Withdraw!"
Fiddler wasn't waiting, not for anything. He couldn't see the captain, but it didn't matter. He felt as if he'd swallowed 100 caltrops. The air stank. Pushing past a confused Coric and then a white-faced Smiles, he caught sight of the squad directly ahead.
"Bam! Dead smell! Awaken your warrens! Same for Widdershins! Where's Cord? Get Ebron!"
"Sergeant!"
He twisted back, saw Faradan Sort forcing her horse through the milling soldiers.
"What are you doing?" she demanded. "It's some foreign army out there. We've sent emissaries. You're panicking the soldiers."
Fiddler caught Tar's level gaze.
"See, they're formed up. Toss the word out fast as it can go. You understand, Corporal?"
"Aye, sir."
"Sergeant!"
Fiddler pushed his way to the captain, reached up and dragged her down from the saddle. Cursing, she flailed, unbalanced. As her full weight caught him, Fiddler staggered and then went down, Sort on top of him. In her ear, he said,
"Get the fuck off that horse and stay off it. Those emissaries are already dead, even if they don't know it. We need to dig in, Captain, and we need to do it now."
She lifted herself up, face dark with anger, and then glared into his eyes. Whatever she saw in them was hard and sharp as a slap. Sort rolled to one side and rose.
"Someone get this horse out of here. Where's our signaller? Flags up. Prepare for battle. Ridge defense. Foot to dig in. Munitions spread second trench. Get on it, damn you!"
Most of the damned soldiers were doing nothing but get in the way. Snarling and cursing, Bottle forced through the press until he reached the closest supply wagon. He scrambled onto it, pulling himself by the rope netting until he was atop the heaped bales. Then he stood. A half dozen of the adjunct's emissaries were cantering towards that distant army. The sky above the strangers swarmed with... birds? No. Renazan. And some bigger things. Bigger. And Carl? Wival? He felt sick enough to void his bowels. He knew that smell. It had soaked into his brain ever since he'd crawled through a shredded tent.
That army isn't human. Adjunct, your emissaries.
Something blinding arced out from the foremost line of one of the distant phalanxes. It cut a ragged path above the ground until it struck the mounted emissaries. Bodies burst into flames, burning horses reeled and collapsed in clouds of ash. Bottle stared.
Hood's holy shit.
Cinta ran as fast as she could, cutting between ranks of soldiers. They were finally digging in, while the supply train, the wagons herded like enormous beasts between mounted archers and lancers, had swung northward, forcing, she saw, the leathery forces to divide almost in half to permit the retreating column through their ranks. That wasn't good. She could see the chaos rippling out as the huge wagons plunged into the narrow avenue. Pikes pitched and wavered to either side, the press making figures stumble and fall. Not her problem. She looked ahead once again, saw the vanguard, saw the adjunct, Captain Yill, fists Blistig and Keneb, and a score or so honor guard and mounted staff. Taveray was issuing commands and riders were winging out to various units. There wasn't much time. The distant hills had been swallowed by marching phalanxes, a dozen in sight and more coming, and each formation looked massive. 5,000? 6? The thunder was the measure of their strides, steady, unceasing. The sky behind them was the colour of bile, winged creatures swarming above the rising dust.
Those soldiers, they aren't people. They aren't human. Gods below, they are huge.
She reached the vanguard.
Adjunct!
Tavare's helmed head snapped round.
Adjunct, we must retreat. This is wrong. This isn't...
Sergeant, Tavare's voice cut through like a blade's edge. There is no time. Furthermore, our obvious avenue of retreat happens to be blocked by the Lethary Legions.
Send a rider to Bryce.
We have done so, Sergeant.
They aren't human.
Flat eyes regarded her. No, they are not. Kachane.
They don't want us. We're just in their fucking way.
Expressionless, the adjunct said, It is clear they intend to engage us, Sergeant. Wildly, Cinta turned to Keneb.
Fist, please, you need to explain.
Cinta, said Tavare, Kachane Naruk. Keneb's face had taken on the colour of the sickly sky. Return to your squad, Sergeant. Quick Ben stood wrapped in his leather cloak, 30 paces on from the Malazan vanguard. He was alone. 300 paces behind him, the Lethary companies were wheeling to form a bristling defensive line along the ridge on which the column had been marching. They had joined their supply train and herds to the bone hunters, and it seemed an entire city and all its livestock was wheeling northward in desperate flight. Bryce intended to defend that retreat. The High Mage understood the logic of that. It marked, perhaps, the last rational moment of this day. Ill luck. Stupid, pathetic, miserable mischance. It was absurd. It was sickening beyond all belief. Which gods had clutched together to spin this madness? He had told the adjunct all he knew. As soon as the Warren's mouth had spread wide, as soon as the earth trembled to the first heavy footfall of the first marching phalanx,
We saw their sky keeps. We knew they weren't gone. We knew they were gathering. But that was so far away and so long ago now.
The reek of their oils was heavy on the wind that still poured out from the warren. Beyond the ochre veil he could see a deepness, a darkness that did not belong.
They have come here, to the wastelands. They have been this way before.
Ambitions and desires spun like ash from a pyre. All at once it was clear that nothing was important, nothing beyond this moment and what was about to begin. Could anyone have predicted this? Could anyone have pierced the solid unknown of the future, carving through to this scene? There were times, he knew, when even the gods staggered back, reeled with bloodied faces.
No, the gods didn't manage this. They could not guess the adjunct's heart, that wellspring so full with all she would reveal to none. We were ever the shaved knuckle, but in whose hand would we be found? None knew, none could even dream.
He stood alone, warrens awake and seething within him. He would do what he could for as long as he was able, and then he would fall, and there would be no one left but a score of squad mages and the Atri Cedar.
On this day we shall witness the death of friends. On this day we may well join them.
The High Mage Adiphon Ben Delat drew from a pouch a handful of acorns and flung them to the ground. He squinted once more at the deepness beyond the veil, and then down to the Naruk legions. Monstrous in their implacability.
Steal one away, and it's damned near mindless. Gather them in their thousands, and their will becomes one. And that will is God's below. It is so very cold.
The Naruk were half again as tall as a man, and perhaps twice the weight. Little of their upper bodies could be seen, even as they drew to within 200 paces, for they were clad in sheaths of enamel or boiled leather armour extending out to their upper arms and reaching down to protect their forward-thrusting thighs. The stubs of their tails bore similar armour, but in finer scales. Wide helms enclosed their heads, short snouts emerging between ornate cheek guards. Those in the front lines held arcane clubs of some sort, blunt-ended and wrapped in bundles of what looked like wire. For each dozen or so, one warrior walked burdened beneath a massive ceramic pack that sat high on its shoulders. Behind this first line of warriors, the other ranks carried short-handled halberds or falchions, held vertically. Each phalanx presented a breadth of at least 100 warriors, all marching in perfect time, upper bodies leaning forward above their muscled reptilian legs. There were no standards, no banners, and no obvious vanguard of commanders. As far as Ruthen Gud could determine, there was nothing to distinguish one from another, barring those wearing the strange kit bags. Frost glistened from his entire body now, and ice had spread thick as armor to encase the horse beneath him. It was already dead, he knew, but the ice knew to answer his commands. He rode a dozen paces ahead of the front line of Malazans, knowing that countless eyes were upon him, knowing they were struggling to understand what they were seeing, not just this alien army so clearly intent on their annihilation, but Ruthen Gud himself, out here astride a horse sheathed in ice, the ice murky with hints of the form it had engulfed. He held the Stormrider sword as if it was an extension of his forearm. Ice had crept up to his shoulder, gleaming yet flowing as would water. Eyeing the Naruk, he muttered under his breath,
"Yes, you see me. You mark me. Send your fury my way. First and last, strike me."
Behind him, from haphazard trenches, an ominous hush. The bone hunters crouched as if pinned to the ground, caught unawares, so rocked by the unexpected impossibility of this that not a single defiant shout sounded, not a single weapon hammered the rim of a shield. Though he did not turn round, he knew that all motion had ceased. No more orders to be given. None were, truth be told, necessary. By his rough count, over 40,000 Naruk were advancing upon them. He almost caught an echo of the cacophony only moments away, as if the future's walls were about to be shattered, flinging horror back into the past, to this moment to ring deafeningly in his skull.
"Too bad," he muttered. "It was such a pretty day."
"Hood's breath, who is that?"
Adjunct Tavare's eyes narrowed.
"Captain Ruthen Gud."
"That's what I thought," Lostara Yil replied. "What's happened to him?"
In answer, the adjunct could only shake her head. Lostara shifted on her horse, free hand drifting to the knife at her belt, and then twitching away.
"Sword, you idiot, not the knife, the stupid sword."
A face drifted into her mind. Henar Vigolf. He would be with Bryce right now, ready to set off with orders. The Lethary were set back, forming two distinct outside flanks, like the outer bends of a bow. They would witness the collision of the front lines, and then, she hoped, they'd quickly see the suicidal insanity of standing against these damned lizards, and Bryce would deliberately rout his army.
"Get the hood out of here. Leave all the gear behind. Just flee. Don't die like us. Don't stand just because we're standing. Just get out, Bryce. Henar, I pray you, I beg you."
She heard horse hoofs and glanced over to see Fist Keneb riding down the length of the humped berm, passing the ranks of his dug-in soldiers.
"What's he doing?"
He was riding for Captain Ruthen Gud. Tavare spoke.
"Sound horn, signaller. Order Fist Keneb to personally withdraw."
A blast of wails lifted into the air.
"He's ignoring it," Lostara said. "The fool!"
Quick Ben caught sight of Ruthen Gud, and he grunted.
"I'll be damned. A mail-bit Narus horse-born storm rider. Who knew?"
But what was he doing out front like that? After a moment, the High Mage swore under his breath.
"You want him to take you first. You want to draw them to you. You're giving the Bone Hunters a dozen heartbeats to realize what they have to deal with. Captain Ruthen Gud, or whoever you are. Gods, what can I possibly say? Go well, Captain. Go well."
Swearing, Keneb savagely drove his spurs into the flanks of his mount. That was Ruthen Gud, and if the fool wasn't what he pretended to be, then the Malazans needed him more than ever. The man could be a damned god, but single-handedly charging those things will still see him chopped to pieces. Ruthen, we need you. Whoever and whatever you are, we need you alive. Could he reach him in time? Captain Scannerow kicked at one of her soldiers, pushing the idiot back into the shallow trench.
Keep digging,
she snarled, and then returned her attention to that gleaming figure riding out towards the lizards.
You stupid lying bastard! A storm rider? Impossible! They live in the damned seas! Ruthen, please, what are you doing?
Seeing the first line of the nearest phalanx level their bizarre clubs, Ruthengard gritted his teeth. This storm rider crap had better work, but gods below, it does hurt to wear. He wheeled his mount to face the Narook, and then raised high his sword. Sunlight flashed through the ice. A rider was coming up from behind and to his left. Poor bastard. That's what you get for taking orders. Without a backward glance, he drove his spurs into the flanks of his mount. Sparks flashed from the ice. The beast lunged forward. You sorry Malazans. Watch me and then ask yourself, how deep can you dig? Fiddler cocked his crossbow, carefully inserted a sharper-headed quarrel. Now that it was happening, he felt fine. Nothing more to be done, was there? Everything was alight, cut clear, the colours of the world suddenly saturated, beautiful beyond belief. He could taste it. He could taste it all. Everybody loaded? Grunts and nods from his squad, all of them crouched down in the trench. Keep your heads right down, Fiddler told them again. We'll hear the charge, count on it. Nobody pokes up for a look until my say-so, understood? He saw, a few squads down, Balgrid edging up for a look. The healer shouted, Guards, charging them! Along the entire line of marines, helmed heads sprung up like mushrooms. Fuck! Crump was on his hands and knees, a clutch of sharpers set like black turtle eggs in a shallow pit pushed into the stony floor of the trench. Ebron stared in horror.
Have you lost your mind? Spread 'em down the line, you idiot!
Crump looked up, eyes widening.
Can't do that, Mage. They're mine. All I got left.
Someone could step on them.
But Crump was shaking his head.
I'm protecting them, Mage.
Ebron swung round.
Cord, Sergeant, it's Crump. He's...
The wire-bound clubs in the front line seemed to ignite like torches. Lightning arced from the blunt heads, two serpentine tendrils snaking into the air. From each weapon, one of the bolts twisted and spun to sink into one of the strange ceramic packs, a dozen such arcs for each pack. The second crackling tongue of white fire seemed to throb for an instant, and then as one they lashed out, a score or more converging on the charging ice-clad rider and horse. The detonation engulfed Ruthengard and his mount, tore gouts of earth and stone from the ground in a broad, ragged crater. An instant before the explosion, other front lines had awakened their own weapons, and even as the flash erupted, hundreds of bolts snapped out to strike the front trench. On his way back to the squad, Bottle was thrown down into the trench, the impact punching the breath from his lungs. Gaping, his head tilted to one side, he saw a row of bodies lifted into the air along the entire length of the berm. All those who had climbed up to watch Ruthen's charge. Marines, most of them headless or missing everything above their ribcages, twisted amidst dirt and rocks and pieces of armor and weapons. Still unable to breathe, he saw a second wave of the sorcery lance directly over his trench. The ground shook as ranks behind him were struck. The blue of the sky vanished behind thick clouds. Bodies sailed in and out of those churning clouds. Bottle writhed, deaf, his lungs howling. He felt the muted impacts of sharpers, too close, too random. A hand reached down out of the sudden gloom and closed on his chest harness. He was dragged out from the slumped side of the collapsed trench. Bottle coughed out a mouthful of earth, hacked agonizing breaths, his throat afire. Tar's spattered face was above him, shouting, but Bottle could hear nothing.
No matter, he pushed Tar back, nodding.
I'm all right. No, honest, I'm fine. Where's my crossbow?
Keneb had come too close. The detonation caught him and his horse and literally ripped them both to pieces. Chunks of flesh sprayed outward. Ebron, leaning hard over the berm, saw part of the fist's upper torso, a shoulder, a stub of the arm, and a few splayed ribs, cartwheels skyward, lifted on a column of dirt. Even as the mage stared, disbelieving, a sorcerous bolt caught him dead center on his sternum. It tore through him, disintegrating his upper chest, shoulders, and head. Limp howled as one of Ebron's arms flopped down across his thighs, but no one heard him. They had seen Quick Ben, but had elected to ignore him. He flinched as the first waves of lightning ploughed into the defences along the ridge. Thunder rattled the ground, and the entire facing side of the Bone Hunter army vanished inside churning clouds of dirt, stone, and dismembered bodies. He saw the nodes recharging on the shoulders of the drones. How long?
No idea, he whispered. Little acorns, listen. Go for the drones. The ones with the packs. Forget the rest, for now.
Then he set out, walking down towards the nearest phalanx. The Narukh front was less than 100 paces away. They had seen him, and now they took note. Lightning blistered all along the front line. Horse clambering drunkenly from the crater, Ruthan Gudge shook his head, readying his blazing weapon. Dirt streamed down his back beneath his smeared, steaming armor. He spat grit. That wasn't so bad now. Directly in front of him, 20 paces away, looming huge, the front line. Their eyes glittered like diamonds within the shadows beneath the rims of their ornate helms. The fangs lining their snouts glistened like shards of iron. He had an inkling that they had not expected to see him again. He rode over to say hello.
Crossbows at the ready, Fiddler yelled. Go for the nodes.
The what?
The lumpy ones. That's where the magic's coming from.
Korik scrambled to crouch beside Fiddler. The man was sheathed in bloody mud.
Who pops up for a look, Fid?
I will, said Korab, surging upward and clawing up the berm. Cart's below. That captain's still alive. He's in their ranks.
As Korab made to clamber out of the trench, clearly intending to join Gud and charge the whole damned phalanx, Tar reached out and dragged the fool back down.
Stay where you are, soldier. Get that crossbow. No, that one there. Load the fucker.
Range, Korab? Fiddler asked. 40 and slowed, sergeant. That captain's carving right through him.
Won't matter much. I don't care if he's got Opon's poker up his ass. He's only one man.
We should help him.
We can't, Korab, Fiddler said. Besides, that's the last thing he'd want. Why do you think he went out there on his own?
Leave him, soldier. We got our own trouble come knocking. Korik, you take the next look. Count of 10. 9, 8, 7.
I ain't getting my head blasted off.
Fiddler swung his crossbow round to point at Korik's chest.
4, 3, 2, 1. Up you go.
Snarling, Korik scrambled upward, then was back down almost instantly.
Shit. 25 and picking up speed.
Fiddler raised his voice.
Everyone ready? The nodes! Hold it! Hold it! Now!
Hedge led his bridge burners just to the rear of the last trenches.
I don't care what Quick thinks. He's always had backup. He never went it alone. Ever. So that's us, soldiers. Keep up there, sweet lord. Look at Rumjugs, she ain't even breathing hard.
She's forgotten how,
Sweet Lard gasped.
Remember what I said, Hedge reminded them. Bridge burners have faced worse than a bunch of stubby lizards. This ain't nothing, right?
We're gonna win, Commander.
Hedge glanced over at Sunrise and grinned.
Count on it, Sergeant. Now, everyone check your munitions. And remember to aim for the lumpy ones. We're about to pull into the open.
A concussion shook the very air, but it came from the Narukh lines. A billowing black cloud rose like a stain of spilled ink.
Gods, what was that?
Hedge's grin broadened.
That soldier's was Quick Ben.
Lightning arced out from hundreds of clubs, from multiple phalanxes to either side of the one he had attacked. The bolts snapped towards him, then slanted off as Quick Ben flung them aside.
And I ain't Taishren, and this ain't Pale. Got no one behind me, so keep throwing them my way, you damned geckos. Use it all up.
The first dozen or so ranks of the phalanx he'd struck were down, a few writhing or feebly struggling to rise with crushed limbs and snapped bones. Most were motionless, their bodies boiled from the inside out. As he walked towards those who remained, he saw them regrouping, forming a line to face him once more. The huge falchions and halberds lifted in readiness. Quick Ben extended his senses until he could feel the very air around the creatures, could follow currents of that air as they slipped through gills into reptilian lungs. He reached out to encompass as many of them as possible, and then he set the air on fire. Lightning shunted from the High Mage, careened off into the sky and out to the sides. Sergeant Sunrise shrieked as one bolt twisted and spun straight for Hedge. He flung himself forward, 3 paces that seemed to tear every muscle in his back and legs. He was a bridge burner. He was the man he had always wanted to be. He'd never stood taller, never walked straighter, and all because of Hedge.
See me, Sunrise!
He was smiling as he flung himself into the lightning's path. Hedge's sergeant erupted, blinding white, and then where he had been was nothing but swirling ashes. His soldiers were screaming behind him. Spinning, Hedge shouted,
"Everyone down to the ground! We'll wait it out! We wait it out!" "Fuck you, Quick. This ain't Pale, you know, and you ain't Taishren."
Ruthan Gud slashed down to either side, but the damned things were pressing in. They'd halted his forward progress. Heavy iron blades cracked and skittered against his horse, his thighs. The armor was showing cracks, but after each blow, those fissures healed. His sword cut through helms and skulls, necks and limbs, but the Naruk did not relent, closing tighter and tighter about him. He heard concussions somewhere to his left, caught the stench of howling warrens being forced to do unspeakable things.
"Quick, Ben, how much longer can you hide?"
Well, Ruthan knew he'd not be around to witness any revelations. They were taking him down with their sheer weight. His horse staggered, head thrashing and flinching with every savage downward strike of falchions. The rest of the phalanx had moved past the knot trapping him, were ascending the ridge, only moments from reaching the first trench. He caught flashes of other phalanxes marching past. 4 blades struck him simultaneously, lifting him from the saddle with a splintering explosion of ice shards. Cursing, he twisted, lashing out even as he plunged into the maelstrom of reptilian limbs and iron weapons. And then taloned feet, slashing, stamping down. A blow to the face stunned him. White, and then blessed darkness. 12 paces. The surviving marines rose as one from the foremost trench. Crossbows thudded. Sharpers cracked and burners ignited. Directly before Fiddler, he saw his bolt glance off a node and then explode immediately behind the lizard's head. The helm went spinning, whipping fragments of brain and bone in a wild cavorting tale of gore. The node blackened and then exploded. The concussion threw Fiddler back, down into the trench. Pieces of hide and meat rained down. Half-winded, he struggled to reload his lobber. 1 last cusser.
Gotta get rid of it before it goes up like those sharpers down the line. Gods, we've been chewed up.
Shadows swept over the trench. He looked up. The Naruk had arrived. Korab had managed to reload. Lifting his head, he saw a giant lizard rising above the berm, maw tilting down as if grinning at him. His quarrel vanished into its soft throat, punched out through the back of its skull. The creature wobbled. Flinging away the crossbow, Korab drew his sword and scrambled to his feet. He swung at the nearest shin. The impact nearly broke his wrist and the weapon's edge bit deep into bone and jammed there. Still, the creature stood, twitches rippling through its massive body. Korab struggled to pull loose his sword. To either side, Naruk clambered over the berm, leapt down into the trench. The backswing lifted Sergeant Primly into the air, and he rode the iron blade, his blood spilling down as if from a bucket. Shrieking, Nella flung himself onto the lizard's left arm, pulled himself higher, and then forced the sharper down between the enamel chest plate and the greasy hide. Jaws snapped, closed on his face. Phlegm like acid splashed his eyes and skin. Howling, Nella tightened his grip on the sharper and then drove the fist of his other hand against the armor directly opposite the munition. Mulvan Dredder, driving a spear into the lizard's belly, caught the blast as the creature's chest exploded. Ceramic shrapnel shredded Mulvan's neck, punching red gore into the air behind him. Nella was flung back, his right arm gone, his face a slashed, melting horror. Primly's corpse landed 5 paces away, a flopping thing painted crimson. The lizard toppled. 2 more appeared behind it, falchions lifting. Stumbling, Drawfirst set her shield and readied her sword, as Skulldeath leapt past her, landing in between the 2 Naruk. A bolt sizzled close to her horse's head. Its muzzle and mane burst into flame. Skin peeled and cracked from mouth to shoulders. The animal collapsed. Lastariel managed to roll clear. The heat had flashed against her face, and she could smell the stench of scorched hair. Staggering to her feet, she looked over to see 12 staff riders down, roasted in their armor. The adjunct was lifting herself from the carnage, her Otataral sword in 1 hand.
"Get me Keneb!" "Keneb's dead, adjunct," Lostaro replied, staggering over.
The world spun and then steadied. Tavare straightened.
"Where?"
Lostaro reached the woman, pulled her down to the ground.
"You shouldn't even be alive, Tavare. Stay here, you're in shock. Stay here, I'll find help."
"Quick, Ben, the High Mage."
"Aye."
Lastara stood over the adjunct, who was sitting as would a child. The captain looked over to where she'd last seen Quick Ben. He'd annihilated an entire phalanx, and where it had been, the fires of superheated flesh, hide and bone still raged in an inferno. She saw him marching towards another phalanx, above him the sky convulsing, blackening like a bruise. Sorcery erupted from the High Mage, struck the phalanx, burning corpses lifted into the air.
"I see him. Adjunct, I can't..."
From the darkness in the sky, a sudden glow, blinding, and then an enormous spear of lightning descended. She saw the High Mage look up, saw him raise his arms, and then the bolt struck. The explosion could have leveled a tenement block. Even the Naruk in the phalanx 30 or more paces away were flattened like sheaves of wheat. Flanking units buckled on the facing sides. The shock wave staggered Lostara, stole her breath, deafened her. Hands to her face, she slumped down, struck the ground hard.
"Pearl?"
Scannero threw herself down into the second trench where the heavies were waiting.
"The Marines are overrun. Sound the fallback and make room for the survivors. Let them through. Get ready to hold this trench."
She saw a messenger, unhorsed, crouching behind the headless corpse of a heavy.
"You, find Captain Kindly. I just saw the vanguard go down, and I don't know where Blistig is, so as far as I'm concerned, Kindly's now in command. Tell him we need to begin a retreat. We can't hold. Understood?"
The young man nodded.
"Go."
Bryce flinched as the Naruk lines struck the Malazan defences. He saw the heavy falchions descending. Barely slowing, the lizards swarmed over the first trench and began closing on the next one.
"Aranect!" "I think she lives, Commander."
Bryce swung round in his saddle, caught the eyes of his outriders.
"We need to retrieve the adjunct. Volunteers only."
1 rider pushed through the others. Henar Vigolf. Bryce nodded.
"Get your spare horses, Lieutenant."
The huge blue rose saluted.
"When you have them," Bryce said before the man turned away, "ride for the supply train."
The soldier frowned. Bryce gritted his teeth.
"I will not stand here watching this slaughter. We will close with the enemy."
They saw the impossibly thick bolt of lightning tear down from the dark stain ahead. As the shock waves drummed through the ground, Warleader Gaul raised an arm to signal a halt. He faced Kiswear, his face ashen.
"I am sending you to the Mortal Sword, Krughava,
Tell her the Malazans are assailed, and that the Khandril ride to their succor.
She stared at the man.
War leader?
Right, soldier. You are not Khandril. You do not understand what it is to fight from a horse. Tell Krukhava the gods were cruel this day, for she will not reach the Malazans in time.
Who is their enemy?
Kiswe demanded.
Your shamans are blind. We know less than you. Ride, Kiswe.
She swung her horse round. Gaul rose in his stirrups and faced his warriors. He drew his tulwar and held it high, and said nothing. In answer, 6,000 weapons were freed and lifted skyward. Gaul pulled his horse round.
Ride ahead, Rafala, until you sight the enemy.
The woman kicked her mount into a gallop. After a moment, Gaul led his army after her, at a quick canter, and the sound of thunder grew louder, and the yellow sky deepened to brown, in which flashes bloomed like wounds. He wondered what his wife was doing. Worse than chopping down trees, Fiddler gave up trying to hack through legs and began hamstringing the bastards, ducking the slashes of notched weapons, dodging the downward swings. The surviving Malazans had been driven from the first trench, were now struggling to hold a fighting withdrawal across the 10 paces to the heavies trench. Crossbow quarrels and arrows spat out from the troops arrayed behind the heavies, winging at heights mercifully above the heads of the soldiers in their desperate retreat. Most missiles shattered against enamel, but a few were punching through, finding gaps in the Naruk's armor. Beasts were toppling here and there, but not enough. The phalanx was a machine, devouring everything in its path. Fiddler had lost his cusser and lobber in the first trench. The short sword felt puny as a thorn in his hand. A glancing blow had sent his helm flying and blood streamed down the right side of his head. He saw Korik pushing his sword through a Naruk's neck, saw another lizard step in behind the man, halberd lifting high. Bolts punched into both armpits. The creature fell forward, burying Korik. Smiles rushed over, diving and rolling to evade a lashing falchion. Cuttle stumbled up against Fiddler.
Retreat, sound it. I heard. Quick Ben's been Ranald, Fid. That giant strike.
I know. Forget him. Help me get the squad back. The heavies will hold, enough so we can regroup. Go on, I ain't seen Korab or Bottle.
Naruk and human corpses half buried Bottle, but he was in no hurry to move. He saw more of the lizards marching past on all sides.
We never even slowed them. Quick, whatever happened to subtlety?
He could see a sliver of sky, could see the Wival wheeling round up there, eager to descend and feed.
Grandma, you always said don't reach too far. Close your dead eyes now, and remember, I loved you so.
He left his body, winged skyward. Korab yanked hard and dragged his sword from the Naruk's left eye socket. Then he reached down to take up again Sholi's ankle. But the man had stopped screaming, and as he looked, he saw in the heavy's face a slackness, a dullness to the staring eyes. A line of Naruk was closing only a few paces away. Swearing, Korab released his grip and turned to run. The trench of the heavy infantry was just ahead. He saw helmed faces, weapons readied. Arrows and quarrels hissed over them, and the thud and snap of their impacts was torrential behind him. Korab hurried over. Cuttle fell in beside him.
Seen Tar?
Seen him go down?
Bottle?
Korab shook his head.
Smiles? Korik?
Fidd's got him.
Fiddler? He's...
The first trench directly behind the two marines erupted. Naruk ranks simply vanished in blue clouds.
What? Some bastard stepped on a cusser,
Cuttle said.
Serves him right. Come on.
Deathly pale faces beneath helm rims, but the heavies were standing, ready. Two parted and let the marines through. One shouted over at Cuttle,
Those clubs! Got 'em, soldier!
Cuttle yelled back.
Now it's just iron!
At once a shout rose from the length of the trench.
Hail the marines!
And the faces around Korab suddenly darkened, teeth baring. The instant transformation took his breath away.
Iron, aye, you know all about iron.
The Naruk were 5 steps behind them. The heavies rose to meet them.
Hedge watched as the lizards clambered from the enormous crater where Quick Ben had been, watched as they reformed their ranks and resumed their advance. Twisting from where he was lying, he then looked back to study the leathery legions drawing up at a steady half-trot, pikes set and slowly angling in overlapping layers. Hedge grunted.
Good weapons for this. Bridge burners, listen up. Never mind the High Mage. He's ashes on the wind. We're going to soften up the lizards for the leathery. Ready your munitions. One salvo when I say so, and then we retreat. And if the leathery is sharp, they'll make room for us. If they don't, then swing to the right. To the right, got it? And run like Hood himself is on your heels.
Commander, someone cried out.
What?
Who's Hood?
God's below. He's just the guy you don't want on your heels, right?
Oh, right. Hedge lifted his head.
Shit. These ones got clubs and nodes. Check your munitions. Switch to blue. You hear me? Blues. And aim for that front line. Nodes, lads and lasses. Those white lumps.
Commander.
Hood's the...
I hear horses coming from the southeast, I think. Is that horses?
Hedge rose slightly higher. He saw two lizard phalanxes smartly wheeling.
Oh, gods.
Rolling into a charge, Gaul leaned forward on his horse, just like the Malazans to find the ugliest foes the whole damned world had to offer, and the scariest. But those squares had no pikes to fend off a cavalry charge, and they would pay for that. When he'd led his army up to where Rafala had reined in, he'd seen, in the first dozen heartbeats, all he'd needed to see. The enemy was devouring the Malazan army, driving them back, cutting down hundreds of soldiers as if they were no more than children. This was slaughter, and barely a third of the phalanxes had actually closed with the bone hunters. He saw the leathery moving up on both flanks, forming bristling pike walls in a sawtooth presentation, but they'd yet to meet the enemy. Out to the far flanks, mounted troops mustered, yet held far back, unaccountably so, as far as Gaul was concerned. Directly ahead of the Cundrill charge, two phalanxes were closing up to present a solid defensive line, denying the burned tiers the opportunity to drive between the squares, winging arrows on both sides. Gaul needed make no gestures or call out commands. His lead warriors knew to draw up upon loosing their arrows. They knew their lanes, through which the heavier lancers would pass to drive deep into the wounded front ranks of the enemy, drive in and then withdraw. There would be no chance of shattering these phalanxes. The demons were too big, too heavily armored. They would not break before a charge. This is the last day of the Cundrill burned tears. My children, do you ride with me? I know you do. My children, be brave this day. See your father and know that he is proud of you all. The foremost line of demons began preparing strange clubs. Hedge saw the lightning erupt from the Naruk line, saw the jagged bolts tear into the mass of Cundrill warriors. The charge seemed to disintegrate inside a horrific cloud of red mist. Sickened, he twisted onto his back, stared up at the sky. Didn't look like sky at all.
Bridge burners, get ready. Munitions in hand. 1, 2, 3, up!
Bryce had thought the bodies lying on the ground ahead were corpses. They suddenly rose, 40 or 50 in all, and flung objects at the front line of Naruk. The small dark grenades splashed as they struck the enemy warriors. An instant later, the Naruk who had been struck began writhing as the liquid ate through their armor and then their hides. One of the nodes exploded, flinging bodies back, then another and another. All at once, the front ranks of the phalanx were a chaotic mess. Bryce turned to his signaller.
Sound the charge! Sound the charge!
Horns blared. The legions broke into a dog trot, pikes levelled. The sappers were running, swinging to the left and out from the gap between the two forces. They might just make it clear in time. At 6 paces, the leathery ranks surged forward, voices lifting in a savage roar. The teeth of the saw bit deep. 1, 3 rows, 4. The Naruk phalanx buckled, and then the two forces ground to a halt, Pikes were held in place, infighters armed with axes and stabbing swords pushing between the front line to begin their vicious close work. Falchions flashed high and then descended. Bryce gestured. Another messenger came up alongside him. The Onager and Arbalest units are to draw up on the hill to the east. Begin enfilade. Cavalry to provide initial screen until they commence firing. The man saluted and rode off. Bryce looked southeastward. Miraculously, some remnant of the mounted horse warriors had survived the sorcerous salvos. He could see riders emerging from the dust and smoke, hammering wildly into the front ranks of the Narok. They struck with inhuman ferocity, and Bryce was not surprised. To have come through that would have stripped the sanity of any warrior. He breathed a soft prayer for them in the name of a dozen long-lost gods. A messenger reined in on his right.
Commander, the West Legions have engaged the enemy.
And? The man wiped the sweat from his face.
Knocked them back a step or two, but now...
Seeing that he could not go on, seeing that he was near tears, Bryce simply nodded. He turned to study what he could see of the Malazan position. Nothing but armored lizards, weapons lifting and descending, blood rising in a mist. But as he stared, he noticed something. The Narok were no longer advancing. You stopped them? Blood of the gods, what manner of soldiers are you? The heavy infantry stood. The heavy infantry held the trench. Even as they died, they backed not a single step. The Narok clawed for purchase on the blood-soaked mud of the berm. Iron chewed into them. Halberds slammed down, rebounded from shields. Reptilian bodies reeled back, blocking the advance of rear ranks. Arrows and quarrels poured into the foe from positions behind the trench. And from above, Loki Wival descended by the score, in a frenzy to tear and rend the helmed heads of the lizard warriors. Others quickly closed to do battle with their kin, and the sky rained blood. Bottle's soul leapt from body to body, grasped tight the souls of Loki Wival, and flung them down upon the Narok. As each one was pulled down to the slaughter, he tore himself free to enslave yet another. He had reached out, taking as many as he could. Dozens of the creatures, the stench of blood and all that they saw had driven them mad. He needed only crush the tatters of their restraint, loose them upon the nearest beasts that were not Wival. When Kin attacked, he did not resist. The more dead and dying Wival, the better. But he felt himself being torn apart. He felt his mind shredding away. He could not do much more of this, yet Bottle did not relent. Tar stumbled into a knot of marines, glared round.
Limp, where's your...
Dead,
Limp said.
Just me and Crump.
Ruffle?
The round-faced woman shook her head.
Got separated, saw Skim die, that's all.
So what are you doing sitting here? On your feet, Marine? Those heavies are dying where they stand, and we're going to join them. You, Relico, pull vastly on his feet there. You're all coming with me.
Silent, without a single word of protest, the Marines clambered to their feet. They were bleeding. They were exhausted. They gathered up their weapons, and Tar in the lead set out for the trench. Nearby, Erb plucked away the shattered fragments of his shield. Helion crouched beside him, breathing hard, her face streaked with blood and puke, with more of both drenching her chest. She'd said she didn't know whose blood it was. Glancing at her, he saw her hard eyes, her hard expression. Other soldiers were drawn up behind them. Erb turned.
We do what Tar says, soldiers. Back into it, now.
Helion almost pushed past him on the way to the trench. Henar Vigulf reined in beneath the hill. He could see fallen horses and sprawled, scorched bodies where the adjunct's command post had been. He slipped down from his horse, drew his two swords, and jogged up the slope. Reaching the summit, he saw four Narok arriving on the opposite ridge. Lastara Yil and the adjunct were lying almost side by side, likely dead, but he needed to make sure, if he could. He charged forward. The clash of iron woke her. Blinking, Lastara stared into the sky, trying to recall what had happened. Her head ached, and she could feel dried blood crusting her nostrils, crackling in her ears. She turned her head, saw the adjunct lying beside her, chest slowly rising and falling.
Ah, good.
Someone grunted as if in pain. She sat up, in time to see Hanar Vigolf stagger back, blood spraying from a chest wound. Three Naruk closed. Hanar fell onto his back almost at Lostara's feet. She rose, drawing her blades. He saw her, and the anguish in his eyes took her breath away.
I'm sorry.
You're going to live, she told him, stepping past.
Prop yourself up, man. That's an order.
He managed to lift himself on one elbow.
Captain?
She glanced at the Naruk, almost upon her, slowed by wounds. Behind them, a dozen more appeared.
Just remember, Hanar, I don't do this for just anybody.
Do what? She stepped forward, blades lifting.
Dance.
The old forms returned, as if they had but been awaiting her, awaiting this one moment when at last she awoke, possibly one last time. No matter.
For you, Hanar, for you.
The shadow dance belonged to this.
Here, now.
Hanar watched her, and his eyes slowly widened. A league to the southeast, Kiswere dragged herself from her fallen horse. A badger burrow, the den mouth of a fox, something. Her horse thrashed, front legs shattered, its screams shrill in the air. Kiswere's left leg was bent in four places, the stub of bone thrust through her leggings. She drew a knife and twisted round to study the horse, eyes fixing on a pulsing artery in its neck. Didn't matter. They were all dead. Even if she could have reached the mortal sword and that mad red-haired queen, it wouldn't have mattered. She glanced up. The sky was flesh, and that flesh was rotting before her eyes.
Sinter, Badan, Bone Hunters, Adjunct, are you happy? You killed them all. You killed us all.